ever cited.
There was a very famous case with the Open Information Science Journal, which is a library science journal, that only ran for three issues, 2008 to 2011, because one of the graduate students targeted produced a gobbledygook. And it was accepted without any problem, and promptly they charged $800 for APCs.
Right? I mean, we could sit here all day with the scandal stories, but that's a really good one.
But it just goes to show that they knew they were on a good wicket.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, there is the famous, because this is a family podcast, I have to say, there was the famous take me off your effing email list. Which the entire article sent to some journal and published consists entirely of the words "take me off your effing email list," and somebody paid $200 just to show that it could be done.
Yeah.
I don't think the people publishing it minded too much, but that's Bentham Science and the Bentham Open Journals are the first that I know of in this area, and they were pretty notorious. Also that year, Hindawi Publishing, they were based in Egypt, I think, converted the last of its subscription-based journals to OA and became a fully OA publisher. So that was a case of a subscription publisher shifting over. And, you know, Hindawi have also, they've been dogged by accusations of being a predatory publisher, which they don't like. And, you know, we might have to think again about the dividing line between kind of criminal and not so, or predatory and not so good, because the predatory thing really is the stuff which is just, hey, we're going to take your money and it's never going to be reviewed. So, you know, and they promise 2-day turnaround and things like that, which could never be. Same year, 2007, the Oxford University Press reduced the subscription prices on 28 of its hybrid journals, the Oxford Open Journals, to reflect rising levels of author uptake. So because authors were paying article processing charges, Oxford being nice people situated in the city of Oxford, said, you know, we're not entirely a commercial operation. We'll drop our prices. But I think that's relatively rare. The other publishers will claim that they have algorithms and so on to sort this out, but it's a little opaque. If I'm wrong, please don't sue me. Maybe they're all great. 2008, sorry, we're on a bit of a predatory publishing bender at the moment, but these were the interesting things happening this time. That the ordinary kind of open access publishing was chugging along, but in 2008, OMICS Publishing Group was founded, and
I've never heard of them.
Okay, they have a really interesting bit of business model. They publish journals. They also do conferences. Scam conferences. So people will pay. There's a sad case of some guys who in Mexico who got funding to go to a conference in Canada, and it looked like a pretty good conference. There were major people in the field talking at the conference, and they could mix and mingle with people. So they used a good deal of their research funding to go to this conference in Canada, showed up, found that all of the major speakers had cancelled, i.e. they were probably never going to appear in the first place, that there would that everybody else in the field was in the know and hadn't shown up. and the last day was spent being awarded outstanding researcher awards.
And sure they weren't the only company to do this.
No, but they're kind of notorious for it. 2010, and this is really where the term predatory publishing came from. The Beals list came out. Jeffrey Beal put out his first list of predatory publishers and predatory journals. And he, you would have to say, was not a fan of gold open access publishing. I'll quote from him here: "The act of instituting financial transactions between scholarly authors and scholarly publishers is corrupting scholarly communications." So, three uses of scholarly in a sentence, but that's what he believed and believes, and you know he's gone out on a limb with this, and has become quite controversial because some of his, you know, some of his judgments have been questioned. He would be seen to have a pro-First World bias, so he's named outfits like Hindawi, for example, as being predatory publishers when they're probably not. The correct phrase from this is probably lower quality, you know, tier two, tier three, but not necessarily predatory, but they do charge article processing charges. He called his blog, I'm on this, he ran a very lively blog, but he called it scholarly open access. So you got onto this blog thinking, so slightly misleading, but you got onto this blog thinking you were, and there were all the horror stories. And I think, you know, he did get quite a hard time, you know, lots of threats to sue him and so on. And
the site, I think, plus, she got taken down, didn't it?
Well, I think he took it down in the end. Okay. Well, no, what happened is that I think his employers, he was employed by the University of Colorado, as I recall, they felt that, you know, it was a threat to them.
Right.
They were getting denial of service attacks and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. But the actual list itself, Beale's list, is still maintained.
Yeah.
And has a very clear set of criteria.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's become a lot less.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Prejudiced.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he had a review board and so on, and he would, you know, there were problems around the edges of it, and with anything like that, you know, there's you know, claims and counterclaims, and he probably is a little embittered about the whole thing.
Yes.
You know, could be said to have a jaundiced view of journal editors and publishers in certain countries, you'd have to say.
Yes, right.
Is not backward of expressing.
The subject librarian team still uses Beale's list when they're approached by academics or some of the administrators in the colleges trying to do their PBRF rankings to actually assess is this.
Yeah.
So perhaps it's worthwhile that academics, if they're not aware of it,
they
should be.
Now, I should know this. There's the people who don't like Beale's list use that other thing, which is you. And it's the three R's. God, we haven't done our homework. but it's check. It's there's a checklist of things that you go through.
Oh, think, check, submit.
Think, check, submit. I said it was three R's.
Or something like that. Yes.
No, think, check, submit. No, right. That's absolutely it.
It is right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yay for me.
So, T is near R in the alphabet. As is S. that was kind of Beale's list, and that was really the sort of outing and the realization that, you know, hey, there's some bad stuff going on here, and also just some, you know, lower quality.
So those were the sort of like the disadvantages, the issues. But really, gold has its benefits, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and it's a pity that this kind of happened, and you can see perhaps that the very openness of the model made it open to abuse. And looking at the charges, we haven't talked about charges, but the article processing charges are really quite high, can be quite high.
And they can vary between disciplines and journals and everything. Why would that be? I mean, I can understand maybe some scientific journals requiring higher charges, but why are the charges so different?
Well, I'm not expert on this, but some of the things that can make a difference, like Public Library of Science, I think their current charge is US $1,400 or something like that.
Right,
whereas some of them, you go up to the Elsevier journals and so on, you know, you might be looking at, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 US or higher. Part of the difference would be if you, Public Library of Science slightly changed the selection model. When you pay an article processing charge under the BMC and PLOS model, that charge is only levied when the article is accepted for publication.
Right.
So if you submitted an article to a BMC journal, I guess this is still the same, but if you did back in the day, if they sent it to a reviewer and the reviewer, you know, might have gone through several rounds of review and then it didn't get published, they had no income out of that.
Right.
So that there was a price to be paid for being selective, you know. Right. So and journals get their reputation by not publishing articles. That is, by not publishing articles right. that aren't worth publishing. Public Library of Science changed that model slightly because there are things that are that go into it. So there's originality.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of accuracy. They followed all the right methods, all that stuff, and there's also significance.
Yep.
And all of those things are taken into account. Now, PLOS lowered the barrier on significance. They said, you know, if you followed the right methods and you've done all the work and you haven't plagiarized, then we will publish.
Right.
So that allows them to publish more. And they do publish a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, PLOS One is just huge and publishes a lot every year and many, many very good articles, but just many, many, many articles. Right. If you're more selective, then you're turning more stuff down.
Right.
So you've got to make your income of the stuff that you select. So let's say we're going to be a highly selective journal and publish only 20% of the articles that we receive. You've still got to go through the peer review process
of those other
80%.
Gotcha. Right.
And journals are quite reluctant to kind of go, no, we're not even going to bother sending that for peer review. I do peer review, and I must admit, I roll my eyes at the stuff I get sent. Why are they sending me this? But, you know, because I'm a good person, I read it and I go through and I do all the reviewers' comments and so on.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it takes time.
Yeah.
All of which I'm not being paid for, by the way. But
yeah.
So it's not me who's causing journals to be expensive. But if only. But so selectivity would be the publisher's claim too. So that you know the price that the author pays is the price to be in that highly selective journal. And that's the reason why subscription prices are high too. So they say, well, we turn away, you know, we get thousands of submissions and we turn them away. Okay.
So we're still in 2010? We're still with
Beer? Yeah, we are. Yep. Okay. 2010. The other thing that happened then was that MDPI was founded. That's a Swiss open access publishing company. And Catherine had it, didn't you? What does MDPI?
Multidisciplinary Publishing Institute. Was
that's
that
right.
Yeah. Well done. Yeah. Okay. And they have occasionally been on Beale's list. And one of the reasons that Beale claims, I believe, that he was taken down is because they had taken quite a strong court case against him.
Right.
And they published the Frontiers In series and so on.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's hard to say that, you know, from my point of view, that they're predatory. They might just not be very good, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a difference between, you know, a plumber who's not such a great plumber and might charge a bit much or, you know, the tap might still be dripping and a guy who takes your money and never shows up or, you know, steals all your copper pipes.